Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for May 29th, 2022. I'm sure it's still Sunday somewhere in the United States, but on the East Coast it is 12:44 a.m. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. You can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. And this is the AEW Double or Nothing post-show here for Wrestling Night in America. And we'll have a similar schedule next week. Usually we're on the air at 8 p.m. Eastern, but on nights that there are pay-per-views, weekends that there are major events, we go on the air after those shows go off the air. Hence, why we're going on the air so late this weekend. Next weekend will be the same, because next weekend we'll have WWE Hell in a Cell, and we'll go on the air taking your phone calls and emails about that show. So don't forget to tune in then. And, yeah, if you want to hop on the line and talk about Double or Nothing, 515-605-9345 is the number to call. Make sure to hit 1 on your dial pad. If it's getting too late but you want to voice your opinion, that's okay, too. WNIALivecast@gmail.com is where you can send those emails. So looking forward to getting to those. We've got a couple emails in already. So as is tradition here on Wrestling Night in America, we will go through the show match by match first, and then I will look to the phone banks and start taking your calls. I'll also, time permitting, talk a little bit about the matches we know about for Hell in a Cell next week, since we won't have our traditional buffer week in between where we would normally preview the Hell in a Cell card. I'll get to that at the end of the show if we've got time. The pre-show match for Double or Nothing tonight was the team of Hookhausen, Hook and Danhausen, defeating Smart Mark Sterling and Tony Nese. This was about what you'd expect it was, with Hookhausen working pretty well together to defeat Sterling and Nese. A lot of comedy, but the fans ate it up. The first match on the pay-per-view was MJF versus Wardlow, and so much controversy surrounding MJF this weekend. Will he or won't he show up to Double or Nothing? He did indeed show up, and it was the first match of the card, and he took the beating that I think most people expected he would take. I think there were about 100 power bombs that Wardlow ended up delivering to MJF, who was thwarted by the referee from using the Dynamite Diamond Ring to his advantage, as he's done in so many matches prior to this. Wardlow getting the victory. Wardlow is now All Elite. It was announced a little later on that he had signed with AEW, so that happened quickly, as you'd expect. But, you know, some people looking at this and how MJF was squashed here and some of the other things that happened as a potential write-off for MJF, if he is truly unhappy in AEW to the point that he no longer wants to be a part of the company. You could conceivably see this as a write-off to the MJF character on AEW. If not for good, certainly for maybe a few weeks until things get straightened out. But on the other hand, I think this is how people envisioned this match going even before this weekend, when things got very turbulent between AEW and MJF. So I'm not sure really yet how much we can truly read into the finish of that match. Match number two was the Hardys versus the Young Bucks. And this was a match that seems to have split a lot of people, at least on my timeline on social media. A lot of people really liked this match. A lot of people were disappointed by this match. I think if I had to be in one of those two camps, I would be in the disappointment camp. Not that they didn't try hard, not that some of the stuff looked good, but the timing was a little off in certain areas that I thought took away from what they were trying to do. I thought Jeff Hardy in particular looked a step behind everybody else in this match. And, you know, I didn't really like the Hardys going over here. The Young Bucks, I was surprised. They came into the match with a 32-11 record in AEW. 11 losses seems like a lot, especially for a tag team as prolific as the Young Bucks. and especially in 43 matches overall. And really, the Hardys are, in my mind, an attraction at this point. So, you know, maybe you put the Hardys over thinking that you might want to try to squeeze one tag team, either title run or challenging for the titles out of them before, you know, maybe you try to get more out of Jeff Hardy as a singles before you just kind of end the team experiment here. So that's maybe what they're trying to do with the Hardys going over. Other than that, I thought this should have been a place where the Young Bucks got the victory and stayed atop the tag team division. So a disappointing result in my mind and disappointing match. Not to say that it wasn't good, but not as good as you were expecting, especially, you know, and maybe that's unfair expectations, knowing the kind of matches they put together several years ago. They're all several years older at this point with many, many more bumps on their bump card. So that could have played a part in it as well. Match number three was Jade Cargill defeating Anna Jay. This was a very busy match. There was lots of outside happenings going on here. The match was okay, not great. Stokely Hathaway ended up debuting after Smart Mark Sterling was thwarted with his interference attempts, and it looks like he's going to be leading Jade Cargill and the Baddies from here on out. Nothing officially announced, but that's how things sort of stacked up at the end. And Athena, the former Ember Moon in WWE, also debuting, siding with Chris Statlander and the Babyfaces in their face-off with Jade Cargill and the others. So that was basically the first hour of the show. And I thought this was one of the weakest hours of AEW pay-per-views in some time. And so I thought that they really needed a rebound in hour two. And they got off on the right foot with House of Black defeating Death Triangle. And Julia Hart coming out, spraying mist in the face of Pac to lead to House of Black getting the victory. Really up-tempo, upbeat match here with lots going on. And just, you know, sort of, I think, woke this pay-per-view from its slumber, if you will. So that's kind of how I saw this one. You had match number five, which was Adam Cole over Samoa Joe in the Owen Hart Cup Tournament Finals. You know, this is another match that on my timeline I saw sort of split opinions about. I thought this was a really strong match. It was well wrestled, two pros going at it in the ring, but I had some people say that it was boring. And so this is kind of the opposite side that I came down in the Hardy's Young Bucks debate, in that I thought Cole and Joe was better than some had given it credit for. Adam Cole getting the victory, yeah, I understand that, over Samoa Joe here. I'm not going to quibble too much with the results there. Match number six was the Owen Hart Cup Tournament Finals for the women, and it was Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, over Ruby Soho. So you had two heels, Adam Cole and Dr. Britt Baker, both winning this tournament, and not to mention they're a couple. So certainly interesting turn of events here. Dr. Martha Hart came out accompanied by Tony Khan. She spoke a few words of appreciation to the crowd, to AEW, for honoring her late husband's legacy. And she presented both Baker and Cole with brand new titles, signifying they're winning the tournament. So Cole and Baker certainly acted like baby faces while Dr. Martha Hart was talking and presenting them with the titles. I talked about last week on this show how I could see Baker getting the victory if you wanted to start a baby face turn for her. And so I'm wondering if that might be happening here. So that's something to be on the lookout for. Certainly strange positioning in my mind to have two heels winning it, especially the first incarnation of this tournament. So we'll have to see how they capitalize on that and sort of what the reaction from Cole and Baker are in the coming weeks as far as how they react to it, both verbally and non-verbally in the ring. Match number 7 was Scorpio Sky and Ethan Page and Paige VanZant defeating Kazarian, Sammy Guevara, and Ty Conti. This was probably the most that Guevara and Conti had leaned into the negative reaction they've been receiving from fans. They were more overtly heel, did not get along with Kazarian in this match. I thought it was smart to have Kazarian in this match or have a babyface on that team for fans to cheer, because certainly as Guevara and Conti have been leaning into those heel personas, American Top Team has not gone any more babyface to sort of balance this feud out. They've stayed pretty strongly as heels. So Kazarian basically gave the fans someone to root for in this match. And Paige VanZant, you know, I think she showed promise. She struggled at times, but, you know, that's to be expected. This was her AEW in-ring debut, and sort of bearing the lead a little bit on this card that Paige VanZant is debuting in the ring. But I think she showed enough athleticism to warrant some investment in, some further investment by AEW. Also, with this win by Sky, Paige, and VanZant, according to the stipulations, Sammy Guevara and Kazarian can never challenge for the TNT title so long as Scorpio Sky is the champion. Match number 8 was a late addition this past week on the card is Kyle O'Reilly over Darby Allin. This was a good match, and you know, this sort of continued the string of really strong in-ring work coming out of that first hour. But as we are, you know, reaching hour 3 here, it did feel like a match that didn't really need to be on this card following a match that the mixed six-person tag that didn't feel like it needed to be on this card. So, you know, I think it's a little forgivable, at least in my mind, for me personally, because I'm off tomorrow, so I'm not being stretched too thin here. But, you know, I could see just how people would struggle with this. I mean, you know, this was a nearly five-hour show, 4.5 stretching beyond that. And we've made a point saying 4 hours has been too long for AEW shows. And not everybody shares that opinion. There are people who feel that AEW shows in particular at 4 hours fly by because of how well-structured the matches are, how compelling the feuds are, and things of that nature. So there will be people who disagree with that opinion for sure. But O'Reilly and Darby Allin was a strong match, tightly wrestled. I think O'Reilly caught Allen in the face with a knee at one point. So, you know, that was a good match. But again, you wonder on a show with 12 matches, could they have cut down and really not lost anything? I mean, that's the thing. When you're talking about cutting, can you cut from the show and not really lose anything? Would we have lost anything by not having Kyle O'Reilly and Darby Allin? Would we have lost anything by not having the six-person tag match? In fact, I think you could make the argument that Paige VanZant's debut should have been a bigger deal. And because of how many matches were on this card, it couldn't be treated as such. So would it have been better served on an episode of Dynamite or an episode of Rampage where you could try to pull a rating from that match? The 9th match was Thunder Rosa defeating Serena Deeb to retain the AEW Women's Championship. This was just superbly wrestled. And emphasis on wrestled here for this one, because the holds, the mat wrestling, the technique was all very good. It was all very compelling. It was all very tight. And it was really cool to watch. One of the strongest, probably AEW women's pay-per-view matches. If not the strongest, it's right up there. And so I had a really good time watching this match. And it was, you know, I think it went a little long, which again, you know, AEW pay-per-views, their matches tend to be on the longer side. You cut a couple minutes off of every one of these and probably get to the 4 hour mark, if not under. But I didn't think going long took away anything from this match. Match number 10 was a our Anarchy in the Arena match, the Jericho Appreciation Society defeating the team of Brian Danielson, Jon Moxley, Santana Ortiz, and Eddie Kingston. And it certainly lived up to its name. It was Anarchy. And this match went all over the arena, went to backstage portions of the arena. And Brian Danielson ended up tapping out in a combined hold with Chris Jericho and with Jake Hager. And, you know, this is one of those matches that's probably not for everybody. It was very bloody. It was sort of hard to keep track of because you had these men all wrestling in different parts of the arena. So you had to trust the director in the truck to make sure he caught everything important that was going on. And that didn't always happen. It's never going to happen 100%. So, you know, again, not for everybody, but as far as a spectacle, as far as accomplishing what it set out to accomplish, I think it absolutely did that. And Jericho Appreciation Society goes over here. Andrade, backstage, back from his wedding this week, unless this was taped beforehand, welcomed Roosh to AEW. So former Ring of Honor, former star in Mexico, coming to AEW. Not always the easiest to work with, not always the easiest to deal with, so it will be interesting to see how he ingratiates himself into AEW as we move forward here. But he will be joining the Andrade family office, almost seemed to be a co-owner of that with Andrade here. Match number 11 was the tag team titles. One of the more surprising results, I think, on the card was Jurassic Express retaining their tag team titles over Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland and Ricky Starks and Powerhouse Hobbs. Another really strong match here. You had, there were times with Swerve and Keith Lee matched up with Hobbs, Luchasaurus getting involved. I thought that was the strongest part of this match, but a really good tag match and really good to see Jurassic Express get the victory. At one point, taking out an opponent and Jungle Boy briefly showing a little bit of discomfort with Christian's interference in this match. So it's building. It's a slow build to that eventual Christian turn, you would think, down the line. And then the main event, CM Punk winning the AEW Championship from Hangman Adam Page. Pretty straight-up wrestling match. There was a ref bump later on. There was a use of or teased use by Page of the AEW Championship. A lot of people drawing comparisons to Roddy Piper versus Bret Hart, babyface versus babyface at WrestleMania 8 in terms of the layout of the finish. So Punk gets the win, strong main event, strong performance by both men, and we now enter the CM Punk era of AEW. So not a real shock here. It did feel like kind of time to move on from Hangman Adam Page to see what CM Punk could do as champion, how things might change in AEW with Punk as champion. Otherwise worth noting, no Kenny Omega tonight. I had thrown out the possibility, I think, last week that Omega could return, not obviously maybe in a physical capacity due to him still recovering from various surgeries that he's had, but at least to perhaps confront the champion at the end of the night, whomever that may be, whether it's Punk to tease Punk versus Omega down the line, which is one would expect a huge money match for AEW, or had Hangman retained. The specter of Kenny Omega still kind of hanging over Hangman Page's reign, despite him thwarting Omega the last time they met. So that did not happen. There was no Kenny Omega on this show. But 12 matches, 13 counting the pre-show. Long show. We've got a lot of people listening on hold, which is great. We really appreciate you sticking by us here late at night as we've crossed 1 a.m. Eastern here on the East Coast. If you're joining us in progress here. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. You can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. You can find my full-page column each week in the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter. And if you're not a Torch subscriber, pwtorch.com/govip is where you can get signed up. While we do have a lot of people listening, we haven't had anyone press 1 to show up in the queue as wanting to talk or give their opinions on the show. So if you want to do that, you want to get in the queue now, and we'd love to talk to you. We will go to an email here, and this is from Andy from Houston, Texas. Again, you can email us, wnialivecast@gmail.com. Andy from Houston, Texas says, "Hello, Greg. After watching a well-wrestled women's championship match with nearly no crowd interest, though I loved it all the same, and sitting through this train wreck of a stadium stampede match that has enough rapid camera changes to cause epileptic seizures, I'm almost ready to turn off the TV and just give up on the pay-per-view. The match I want to see most is still 2 damn matches away and will be near 4 hours by the time it starts. I almost feel like Tony Khan wants to emulate WWE with overly long pay-per-views. He'd be better served saving some of these matches for marquee moments on Dynamite. Sorry for the rant, but if AEW can't keep their pay-per-view events within 7 matches in 3.5 hours, I have no interest in paying to watch again. They need to start making strategic choices that keep attention and interest at its peak. Always happy to listen to Wrestling Night in America." Thank you, Andy. Appreciate your patronage of the show each and every week. I think another defense of AEW's pay-per-view run times is they only do 4 of them a year. So if you're WWE and you're trying to churn out 3.5-hour shows, 4-hour shows every month, then yes, I think that is pretty close to indefensible. When you're AEW, I think you're able to get away with it a little bit more because you only do it 4 times a year. And so if AEW pay-per-views were every month at this length, then yes, I think that would be a problem. But I think people are more willing to overlook it because it is only 4 times a year. And, you know, again, the length, and WWE has gotten better about this with some of their secondary shows. I know WrestleMania Backlash was lauded for getting their show done in a reasonable amount of time, relatively speaking. This has been a criticism of AEW for a long time. And yet, the pay-per-view buys year over year keep increasing. So if you're Tony Khan, there's really no incentive to shorten the length of pay-per-views. I know there's comparisons to UFC shows, which often go very long as well. But, you know, if you're Tony Khan and maybe you see the pay-per-view numbers start to dip, then you may think to yourself, okay, how can I fix this? How can I stop the bleeding? And then one of the suggestions could be, you know, maybe shorten the length. Maybe that'll be more appealing to people. Maybe that will, you know, make people want to buy the pay-per-view. But the fact that almost every pay-per-view, if not every pay-per-view, is up year over year, there isn't that incentive for him to say, despite the outcries in certain circles of the internet, there isn't that incentive for him to say, hey, maybe we need to scale back. And we've seen just the opposite happen tonight. Even though Double or Nothing is sort of AEW's WrestleMania, and we know that WrestleMania goes long, so Double or Nothing going longer than the usual AEW pay-per-view may not be much of a surprise. But, you know, Tony Khan going even longer this month with the pay-per-view. So, you know, a lot of different calculus going into that. Probably tomorrow being a holiday and being a day off for a lot of people is part of that calculation that Tony Khan makes. But, you know, I can't disagree. I mean, if you feel that these pay-per-views are long, you know, it is a long time. And so I don't – even though I was okay with it this month, I feel that some months where AEW just runs long, and so I totally understand that thought process. There's someone checking in now on the phones. It's the 312 area code. 312, welcome to Wrestling Night in America. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, this is Chris in Chicago. I've called in before, especially when attending shows. Ever since All Out, All In, you know, and even going back before that, you know, just been hooked and appreciate so much. And always travel to go to shows. I I didn't go to this one, and just so annoyed right now by the technical glitches at the start, and then I guess I realized I was a little bit behind, and so all of a sudden it cuts off at the end when Hangman's like eyeing the belt, and I'm like, oh my god, why did my feed cut out? It's finished. And I go online to figure out what's happening, and then I just see plastered across all social media, you know, my former neighbor, CM Punk winning, and I'm just like, ah! So it was pretty annoying and frustrating.
I did hear a lot of people having problems with the BR Live feed. I personally didn't. You know, I was watching on the big screen TV here in the house, and I watched it from start to finish, and there were no skips, there were no glitches, there were no anything. So I know that it was a problem for a lot of people, but just speaking personally, I did not have those problems. So it is unfortunate to hear of folks having those issues.
For me, it was just at the start, and then the rest of the show was perfect, but I guess I never realized I was X minutes behind until all of a sudden it cuts off, like you're watching a DVR. You know, and or whatever. It just said the feed's ended right as he's like eyeing the belt, and I'm just so annoyed. But anyway, aside from that, sure, of course it was long. I mean, everything's long these days. You know, a podcast covering a 3-hour show or 5 hours, everything's long. You know,
I'll try to keep mine at a reasonable length here tonight.
No, for sure. But you know, did they need Darby, Kyle O'Reilly, whatever? I don't know. Sure, we can question all that. It was a great show. I'm so, frustrated at the end, but I'll figure out how to hack the final, you know, however many minutes it is. And, you know, I still love the product. And, you know, I'll just make sure I'll figure out how to scalp a ticket for Forbidden Door so I don't have to deal with this. I'll just go, attend in person next time again.
Yeah, the events rarely skip when you're there live. So probably the best solution.
No, and it's one of the best experiences in person, and I just, for some reason, I couldn't quite get, I don't know what happened with that Forbidden Door. I even had the pre-sales code, but I just could not get a seat. But I'll figure out how to get I'll just pay up for a ground floor seat, whatever, floor seat. But anyway, thank you guys for always doing what you do, and I just had to, vent to someone, so thanks for taking the call.
Sure, Chris. You know what? That's what we're here for. We're here to vent if you need to vent. We're here to listen to your compliments for the show if you have compliments. So, again, if you would like to give your thoughts, positive or negative, on anything related to Double or Nothing tonight, 515-605-9345 is the number to call, and press 1 to show up on the queue, and I'll put you on air and see what you have to say. And if you want to talk Hell in a Cell, which, by the way, is next weekend, so we'll be doing this all over again, talking about a major event as we do each and every week here on Wrestling Night in America. That's kind of what we do. We talk about the big events in pro wrestling, which is why we're covering the shows right after they go off the air. So been doing that for quite some time now, and have really enjoyed getting to know some of our regular callers and getting feedback on these shows and hearing from new callers, too. Always love to hear that as well. While we wait to see if anyone wants to join us on the phones, we'll go back to the emails. And this one was sent earlier today, so before Double or Nothing. And this is Brian, and he says, "Good evening, Greg. Do you think it would be a good move to add Hook and Dante Martin to the Blackpool Combat Club? I could honestly see them as the Arn and Tully, for now, of the faction, and the heir apparent to Moxley and Bryan. They are future stars, and them pursuing FTR has tremendous potential." So my take on Blackpool Combat Club is I like how they are set up right now. I don't think you need to add another person or persons at this point, unless you had a female. I think that would give a different feel to the show and give a different feel to the group. And give a different feel to the women's division by having someone involved with this group and training with this group. So Dante Martin, to me, yes, he's talented, absolutely. But I don't think he fits the attitude or, you know, what the Blackpool Combat Club is all about, which is, you know, that kind of bare knuckle, that kind of, you know, rough and tumble style. And Dante Martin is a high flyer. And, you know, that works for Dante Martin. I don't necessarily want to see Dante Martin become a ground-and-pound fighter the way that Moxley and Danielson largely are. And with Hook, you know, I think you got to let Hookhausen run his course. I'm not sure if it's a short-term or long-term thing, but it's entertaining. The fans ate it up tonight. And so, you know, explore it. Get as much out of that as you can. That all being said, too, I think Hook is at least presented at this point as a loner, even though he is with Danhausen. And so I think he fits the mold and the style of Blackpool Combat Club better than Dante Martin. But, you know, his whole loner persona and attitude, I'm not sure really fits in. Certainly the aggressive style fits in, but I'm content to see him kind of develop on his own and see where he goes from there. All right, another phone call just hopping on. It's the 205 area code. 205, welcome to Wrestling Night in America. Please state your name and where you're calling from. Oop, I got to put him on the air. Hello, 205.
Dean Hacker from Alabama.
Dean from Alabama, good to talk to you today, Dean. What did you think of the show?
Had its ups and downs, and like the show had ups moment, and then it felt like, went down, and you could feel it in the crowd. Let's see. I agree with you guys. There were some matches that, you know, maybe could have been on the pre-show.
Mm-hmm.
And compared to the, you know, having your big pay-per-view matches. And I liked that they did before the pay-per-view. I liked they did that match.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I thought I could see where people having to sit through 4.5 hours. Some things, like I said, just could have been better if it was the pre-show and then your important matches, your title matches, of course, you know, your pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. And anyway, as a fan, I'm glad I wasn't there. But anyway, and also the glitch at the end where, you know, you feel like you're like, oh man, am I gonna miss it? Did he do something? And when it came back on, I was able to see the finish. Like everybody else where felt like, you know, like had that moment like and anyway, but yeah, it was really predictable that CM Punk was going to win.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with you. I felt like tonight, you know, Omega might come back. Is he going to mess with his, you know, rival with Cowboy and, you know, and CM Punk or, you know. But it's going to be interesting to see what they do on Dynamite. It feels like, you know, in AEW, you know, they're growing. It's their fourth year. Pay-per-view, if you notice, agree with me or not, let me know. It seems like they do good pay-per-views or a good show, like the bar sit high. And I know, what is it, Rampage Friday night, you know? But it feels like the pay-per-view is good, but then it feels like they set the bar low. It, like the show goes downhill. And I guess they need to figure out a formula to set the bar high after, you know, a big pay-per-view just like this. You know, they only do 4 pay-per-views. So, but then when it's like back to the show, it just seems like it goes all downhill from there, and then they have to rebuild back up for the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Those are my thoughts tonight.
All right, Dean, thank you for the call. Really appreciate it. As I said, always love hearing from new callers for sure. I think Dean kind of nailed this as far as the ups and downs. I think this had more ups and downs than maybe most AEW pay-per-views just because it started so slow. And I think once you got into the second hour or third hour, I thought it was up pretty consistently. I didn't think there were any really bad matches. Anything under 3 stars, to be honest with you, probably after match number four. Match number four and on, I don't think anything was under 3 stars. You know, maybe the 6-person tag match, you could say, you know, 2.5. But other than that, and some 4 stars and over, I think. But again, that's your mileage may vary, especially on the Anarchy in the Arena match. I know not everybody loved that one. You know, O'Reilly Allen was a well-worked match, but if people didn't really think it belonged on the pay-per-view, they may knock that down a little bit. Cole versus Joe, there's some split opinions on as well. So up and down, more so maybe than most AEW pay-per-views. Dean also talked about kind of the come down after the show once it gets to TV. I'm not sure if I noticed that as much or would agree. I think that the TVs after pay-per-views seem pretty strong with Dynamite. Rampage is, I don't know if you could really judge Rampage on the same scale that you judge Dynamite in terms of capitalizing on momentum after a pay-per-view, just because it is presented so differently. So I think, you know, if you're looking at Dynamite this week, you got 3 new additions from this show in Roosh, in Athena, in, I was going to say Malcolm Bivens, Stokely Hathaway. So where do they slot in? How do they slot in? How are they presented as characters? You've got obviously a new AEW champion in CM Punk. What's his mission statement? Where does he go? Does Paige get a rematch at some point? Does Punk move on? The MJF stuff, maybe not by design from AEW's point of view, but certainly there's a lot of intrigue around his situation. Will he be on the show on Wednesday? Will he be on Dynamite at all? Will he be on Dynamite over the next month? You know, I think that's a fair question to ask. We don't know what his plans are, what his situation is. So I'm sure that if I scrolled through Twitter enough right now, I could find Tony Khan in the media scrum answering questions about MJF. I'm sure those are questions that are being asked of him right now. But that'll be something we can maybe talk about next week after Hell in a Cell as well. We'll go to our final email question, unless we get any more while I'm on the air. And then we'll preview Hell in a Cell. And if no one else jumps on to talk, we'll call it a night. This is Doug from Surrey, British Columbia. He says, "Hi, Greg. The Double or Nothing was good until the street fight of Jericho Appreciation Society and the Blackpool Combat Club. I understand that this match, that this kind of match isn't my cup of tea, but seemed to stop the pay-per-view momentum completely. Too many wrestlers, too many spots, and just too slow. I'd rather have a butt-kicking 3-on-3 match. As I'm writing this, we are at the 4-hour point. It's going to be a long night at work. Too long, AEW, too long. Have a good night, Greg." Thank you, Doug. And so that's interesting. Two emails decrying the length of the show, and 2 emails not terribly impressed with the Anarchy in the Arena match, which is kind of opposite of my feeling. So, yeah. I certainly agree with the too long sentiment, probably more so than the quality of the Anarchy in the Arena match, but I get it. I get that that's, like I said, and I said this when I ran down the card and talked about that match. I said, it's not going to be for everybody. That style of match, with it being difficult to follow, is not going to be for everybody. And so we had a couple of emailers who sort of, you know, crystallized exactly what I talked about there at the open. So I just happen to like it, I guess, more than some. So, again, you can email us anytime, wnialivecast@gmail.com, if you're planning on watching Hell in a Cell next weekend. And don't plan on staying up late on Sunday night to call in. Please email us your thoughts. We'll get to it, talk about it. And, you know, happy to read those emails on air, wnialivecast@gmail.com. I'll also make the last call here for anyone who wants to call in and talk about Double or Nothing or Hell in a Cell, 515-605-9345. Press 1 on your keypad to show up in the queue to talk. So Hell in a Cell right now, as it stands, we have Cody Rhodes versus Seth Rollins inside a Hell in a Cell. So two very different matches we've seen from these two at WrestleMania and WrestleMania Backlash. Pretty safe bet that the Hell in a Cell match will be a third different type of match. But this is one of the many matches that we've seen getting stretched out beyond WrestleMania. And so as long as you have the creative to get you from point A to point B to point C and have three matches within the length of the feud, hey, you know, that's fine. But to do it with so many, I think, is sort of testing people's patience with creative. So we'll see what they come up with here. And, you know, 1 week still left of TV, 1 week of Raw, 1 week of SmackDown to spice things up before next Sunday. And I would expect it to happen with Rhodes and Rollins tomorrow night on Monday Night Raw. But this is the only Hell in a Cell match so far that's been advertised. So Roman Reigns was a late addition to the WrestleMania Backlash card. Will he be a late addition again to the Hell in a Cell card, perhaps announced as late as Friday? Or is he, I think there was some discussion, I can't remember if it was Money in the Bank or Hell in a Cell, where he was not advertised because he's re-signed with WWE, re-signed a contract with fewer dates in it. So this could be a date that he just does not participate on the show. So if that's the case, we have to have another Hell in a Cell match, one would assume. And nothing announced yet. We'll see what other match, at least one more match you would imagine, takes place inside the steel structure. Another match on the card, Bianca Belair versus Asuka versus Becky Lynch for the Raw Women's Championship. All four matches, as I'm looking at the card right now, are Raw matches. So we don't have anything from SmackDown yet. And we have one episode of SmackDown left. And it's the episode of SmackDown that occurs 2 days before the premium live event. So WWE really, I don't know. It doesn't give the impression that they care an awful lot about this show, I guess. But we have Bianca Belair, Asuka, Becky Lynch, Raw Women's Championship match. We know that this was sort of upended when Sasha Banks and Naomi walked out of Raw last week. Certainly caused plans to change here. And even so, a strong three-way. You know, they got Asuka back at the right time, certainly for Sasha Banks and Naomi to walk out and to be able to take that left turn and do something a little different than what they had planned. So I would expect Belair to walk out as champion again here, but two opponents, the strength of Asuka and Becky Lynch puts her title in jeopardy, I would say. We have a handicap match with Bobby Lashley against Omos and MVP. So this is another feud. In addition to Bianca Belair and Becky Lynch, in addition to Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins, we have Lashley and Omos being stretched out to yet another month beyond WrestleMania and beyond WrestleMania Backlash. They could call this WrestleMania Hell in a Cell based on some of the matches that we're seeing redone here on this show. MVP and Omos, this gives Lashley a bit of an out if he were to lose here, because it is a two-on-one situation. Again, I think it's going to tell us, I said this last month as well, it's going to tell us what they think of Omos. You know, right now it's one-to-one. Lashley kind of handling Omos at WrestleMania. I thought, you know, maybe they're done. Maybe they're getting out of the Omos business. But then he comes back and defeats Lashley at WrestleMania Backlash. So we'll be interesting to see. This is an opportunity to put Lashley over Strong against two guys to see if they have, you know, maybe plans to heat him up to face Roman Reigns at some point. Otherwise, it could be Omos who gets a major opportunity if WWE likes the improvement they've seen from him in the ring and if they put him over strong here over Lashley. And then we have the fourth and final match that's been announced so far for Hell in a Cell, Ezekiel, if that is his real name, versus Kevin Owens. Long time coming for this one, first time matchup here. So this is a match that feels fresh and feels new and, you know, has this Ezekiel character being involved. So I'm not really sure what the payoff of this character is. I'm not sure if the payoff is to, you know, have Elias come back in some form to show that they are two people, or if it is eventually revealed that Kevin Owens was right all along and Ezekiel and Elias are, in fact, the same person. Not really sure what the payoff is here, but we're going to get a match anyway. Ezekiel versus Kevin Owens. I don't know. Maybe the stipulation will be if Kevin Owens wins, then Ezekiel is Elias. And if Ezekiel wins, then Ezekiel and Elias are two different people. As little sense as that makes, I sort of half expect that stipulation to be announced on Raw tomorrow night. But we'll see. Four-match show would expect, I would say, 2 to 3 matches, if not more, being announced in the coming days. On Raw and SmackDown, but we'll see. You know, we'll see. This is another candidate to be somewhat of a shorter show, as WWE has done for their secondary pay-per-views. All right. Well, this was a pleasure. Great talking to everybody. I'm glad my voice was able to last. For those who listened last week, you know, I was really struggling. So I have my tea next to me. I have my water next to me just in case. And luckily, I didn't really need them. So made it through. Again, if this is your first time sampling Wrestling Night in America, we'll hope you'll be back next week for Hell in a Cell, and hope we'll be back the week after that at our normal time, 8 p.m. Eastern, where I usually have a co-host from the PW Torch family to help me break down the big shows in pro wrestling. So I hope you'll join us then. I am Greg Parks, PW Torch columnist. You can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. And thanks for listening. And tune in next Sunday, because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.